This hour is brought to you by ETI School of Skilled Trades. Step up to the plate and start your career in welding or HVACR at ETI School of Skilled Trades. Visit eticampus.edu to learn more.
This is ESPN 1000, WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Now, back to more Waddle and Sylvie, live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio
on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Courtney Cronin here in a couple of moments. Beautiful day. Summer winding down here in August. We get closer to football. My guy Jeff Hughes at the Bears blog just tweeted 15 minutes ago, has anyone explained the absurdity of a preseason game on a short week? And I tweeted him back. I go, we've been talking about it all week.
My ass has been red over this now for 2 days.
Carmen, too. Carmen was pissed about this, too.
I mean, and then don't talk travel to me across the player country. Safety.
Right.
And then ask guys to play on a short week during training camp. Get out of here!
Hey, play on this really bad sand field on Saturday. And by the way, get on a plane, go all the way to the Northwest, and play again on Thursday.
Yeah,
think about that.
No, I know. I mean, the bad field conditions is just salt in the wounds. The fact that you're making a team play on a short work week in the middle of training camp.
Preseason.
Zero sense to me.
I guess, and Courtney will talk about this, only 6 to 10 plays for the starters. That's not what you want in the middle
of
game.
Of course not, especially for a team that is actually trying to learn and build with a new staff. This sucks.
Unless they take the third preseason game, the last one now, and approach it like they used to approach the third preseason game and play more. I don't know. We'll ask Courtney. Here's Matt Eberflus today. Any update on Roquan Smith?
Yeah, obviously I knew that question would come up. And really, I don't have anything. All I can say is that it is where it is right now, and we're day to day. Is he in the building? Yes. Is he engaged? Yes. And the next thing I would say that when he practices, and I'm not going to say when that is, when he does, he will be made available to the media, is what I understand.
So it's when, not if, he practices, which is interesting. Eberflus, are they fining Roquan Smith? Remember, last week he was not happy. You took him off PUP for a reason. Are you fining a player who won't practice when he's healthy?
Yeah, as always, we're not going to discuss team discipline. You know, so if we discipline a player or fine a player, all that, we're not going to discuss that up here with the media or with the public. It's going to be in-house, internal.
Let's bring in Courtney Cronin right now. Does a great job. And it's a must read for anybody. I retweeted it this morning, what she tweeted out at about 7:45 last night, the fact sheet about everything you need to know about Roquan Smith. And she talked to various agents around the league as to how they would approach this if they were working with Roquan Smith. It was a really well done piece. What's going on, Courtney?
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're good.
Frustrated.
Yeah, and a little frustrated, too. Like, it was a surprise. It was a big surprise to me when I first heard it that in the second preseason game, they would only get 6 to 10 plays for the starters. And I understand the circumstances. Did it surprise you when you heard that?
No, because you are coming off of a short week. And I know that the twos got, you know, yesterday, they've got like one practice down this week because they're going to be playing the majority of this game. And I don't think you can really take much and get into a rhythm with your starters when you are playing them, what, two series maybe? Yes. On the back end of, you know, 4 days between games. But it's tough. You know, players and coaches aren't going to complain openly and say, well, you know, try to lobby the NFL to do anything about it because it's the hand they're dealt. It's the schedule. Like, you can't change it, but I guess you can try to draw some positives from it, at least like, hey, you're going to be in the situation when you play Washington on that Thursday night game. I believe it's October. It's no different. I mean, it's unfortunate for them because they are such a young team and a lot of their starters are young. So trying to get those guys quality reps will not come in this game. And I truly don't know, you know, why you'd even play guys 6 to 10, because by the time they get in a little bit of a groove, even if we saw Justin Fields in the first team offense, it felt like it was going to take them more than 18 plays. And by the time they started stringing a couple plays together, they were taken out. So I tend to think, and I heard what you were saying, I tend to think they will probably use the third preseason game to get a better evaluation of what that first team unit looks like, both on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, because you really need a quarter of action in order to do that. And I can fully understand and empathize with why they wouldn't want to do that with such little time in between when they last played and then having to pack up, go across the country and play this Thursday night game.
Because, Courtney, I was going to say that you have an offensive line that's a work in progress, and you could give us more on the news on Tevin Jenkins working with the ones inside at right guard. But to me, that line is going to be so vital to protect Justin Fields. They need reps. They barely hit in practice. So they're to get some cohesion going into that first game against a really good San Francisco team, they're going to need some reps, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and you could even hear with Luke Getsy yesterday, he was talking about, you know, Justin needs to play. Like, it's all going to come together. As long as he's out there playing and the repetition and doing it constantly, that stuff matters, and it matters for him. It matters for the offensive line. It matters for a lot of different positions. But I think with that O-line group, you know, the fact that we saw Tevin Jenkins move inside to right guard, we saw Larry Borum get most of the reps at right tackle today, you know, that probably points to Riley Reiff not playing this week. I mean, yeah. I guess you can say, well, he's with a new team. He should, you know, they got a gel and all that. Like, Reiff's a 10-plus-year veteran. Like, there's anybody that I think you would be okay with not having him play in preseason games. It's probably a guy like that who did have the ankle injury last year. He says he's fully healthy. Obviously, he's been practicing and playing, so he should be. But all that aside, I do think that this unit is going to need to play a lot, and I would fully anticipate Tevin Jenkins getting the bulk of those right guard reps, as we saw the last 2 days, because he needs it. Like, he has not played this position, and when Matt Eberflus talked about it today, you know, he said just kind of like his philosophy on, hey, Tevin Jenkins hasn't played right guard much. What are you going to do to make kind of put him in the line for success? And when you don't put a ceiling on a guy and you just kind of let them, like, go and grow with it and not have them on, you know, some sort of pitch count. Like, let him play as much as you need and he needs to play in order to know he's confident and competent at playing the position. Like, the guy is potentially, you know, competing because he was with the ones today in place of Michael Schofield. But there is a legitimate competition brewing at right guard. So in order to solve that question that you have at the position, you got to see the guy play, and he just hasn't done it much, certainly has not done it at all in the NFL at that position. So would anticipate a lot of reps for someone like that on Thursday.
Courtney, I know that the snap counts are going to be down for guys for the reasons you mentioned, but is the expectation that Cole Kmet will play? Will Velus Jones expected to play? Is Gordon, the rookie cornerback, expected to play as well?
Gordon, for sure. He's talked about it. He talked yesterday, and Eberflus today, talking about it being a homecoming of sorts. And, you know, I would anticipate, even though he's been limited, he'll play because he has not played. And, you know, if you want to read between what Matt Eberflus is saying about healthy guys are going to get out there, you know, Cole Kmet said he's 100% healthy. Does that mean he's going to end up playing? I don't know, because he's a starter and it's like 6 to 10 plays, but for some guys it might be 20 plays. Like, they're all over the place with this. And it's almost, I don't know, I almost see it kind of as a disservice if all your starters are not playing a consistent amount together, then they're not getting in a routine together. So maybe they do end up holding Kmet out, even though he is healthy. But I could also see where Matt Eberflus would want to try to get some work in with that group, because he didn't play in the first preseason game. Neither did David Montgomery. And Velus Jones, too. I mean, Velus hasn't played at all this preseason, and he's a rookie. He was out for, you know, 10-plus days. If there's anybody who can benefit from that in trying to get into NFL game speed, it's your rookie wide receiver. Like, they absolutely need him out there. The other two have played in multiple NFL seasons, so I don't think it's as pressing for them.
Courtney, what can you tell us about the Roquan Smith situation? I've spent the last 30 minutes trying to read the Players Association, the CBA, which is, I'm confused. Like, I'm normally confused. Can you clarify, as a fifth year, a guy going into his fifth year, because he's a first round draft pick, is Roquan subjected to fines that the team can actually waive, or are these fines, once he's off the PUP list, is it mandatory that the team has to fine him by the rules of the CBA for every practice that he misses that is not injury related?
Well, to your first point, the CBA is purposefully vague and confusing. I've talked with people in other front offices, and I kind of get that. Yeah, Courtney, welcome to our jobs that we deal with every single day trying to decipher this mess. And, you know, if you read over the section about fifth-year options and those fines and players who are going into the fifth year and don't have their contract sorted out, like, you have to show up at preseason training camp. Like, if you don't report on time to camp, that's where those mandatory fines that, to my understanding, unless you are on a rookie deal, those do not get waived. So if you were, let's use Aaron Rodgers' situation last year when he ends up flying in on that plane right, the 11th hour, gets to training camp, because the fines for veterans who want a new contract, don't have it yet, those are $50,000 a day, and those do not get waved away when everybody, you know, is happy and kumbaya and whatever. Like, for rookies, they can, but those are automatic fines. Like, so it would have to be up to the team and probably appealing for them to get those fines removed. But because he showed up to training camp, he's here. He's a hold-in, but he's not practicing, but he is here. And you heard Matt Eberflus say he's been in the building, he's been in meetings, et cetera, et cetera. Like, he's done the part that's required of him to not get fined right, that daily amount of $40,000. But what we don't know, and what Matt Eberflus would not talk about and disclose, is whether he's getting fined for missing practice because he's healthy. Like, he got off PUP last week and cleared his physical. So he is cleared to practice. He's not, though. He's traveling to Seattle, which is just such a bizarre situation. Yeah. And it's honestly awkward. Like, I'm standing out there watching practice and seeing him walk across the field and then go stand behind the defense with, like, the rest of the linebackers just chit-chatting and all that. And, like, you know, 100 yards away is, you know, the half the members of the front office that are in this situation with him. And it's just tenuous. I mean, I know that players are going to say, oh, we don't talk about it. Like, I'm not concerned with his contract situation. This is about as big of a distraction and as ugly of a distraction as you could possibly have for a team that has had missteps every single step of the way during the preseason. And some of that is self-inflicted. Some of it's not. And I just think, like, every time we hear something, especially with the developments yesterday that he had someone on his behalf who's not an NFLPA certified agent contacting teams, trying to, like, broker a deal or at least see if there's wiggle room because of where teams' caps are typically at this point of the preseason, to try to work out a trade and then an extension. Like, what the hell are we doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what are we doing? It's every step of the way, this thing keeps getting more bizarre, and it just keeps ongoing and ongoing. And you know, this is a nationally televised game on Thursday on ESPN. Like, you don't think they're going to be talking about this, like, every 10 minutes? It's not a great look for the Chicago Bears, and you think that they probably wish that this thing would get solved, so it's not the main storyline in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to be like a dog on a bone, but, like, so it's still at the discretion of the team whether or not they want to actually fine him. And the reason I stick with this is because this is a huge negotiating component. Because if I do my math correctly, if you go through the money that they've saved him by initially put him on PUP, they took him off of PUP so they didn't expose themselves to any type of punishment from the league, because they get itchy and scratchy about you playing loose and careless with the rules. So now, and then they also had the ability to fine him if they wanted to for missing the preseason game against the Chiefs. They have foregone the opportunity to fine him in excess of $1 million so far. That's why I think this is an interesting component, whether or not the team is actually fining him or they're still not in the process of taking his money.
Yeah, it's hard. And I feel for Ryan Poles in this situation, because you think about what he inherited, and this is not a player he drafted, and kind of the rock in the hard place that Matt Eberflus too has been put in, where he's, you know, the buffer effectively between the front office and the player. And if you like the player, if you want the player to feel empowered to play for you, you're not going to go badmouth him in spite of how frustrated you might be with the situation of him not practicing. But, like, the facts are, as I laid out in my FAQ, this team has not granted Roquan Smith permission to seek a trade. They have not. So what's going on behind the scenes, and what the NFL PA found out and then contacted the management council about, was, you know, that's something that's going to rub this team the wrong way. And I do think, and I mean, they're going to claim till the day they die that he had an injury and that's why they put him on PUP. Because if you were using that as a way to circumvent the rules, then you're going to get in trouble from the NFL because they're going to be like, let's see the scans of whatever was ailing him. Well, otherwise, why did you have, because that keeps, that's not, that he stays on the active roster. That's not an extra roster spot you get. Like, you're still paying him at his salary. So then they take him off and you can infer why they took him off because it came the day after his trade request last week. And it seems like a hardball type move, but we're still in this spot right now where he's not practicing. It didn't change anything. So, you know, the fact that at least, you know, it's a big unknown. Will they find him? Won't they find him? I don't think you can blame the team for wanting to do it, but that also creates more friction within the situation. And it's tenuous as it is. Like, I feel like the Bears might have, if they really don't want to pay him top of market, which we can argue whether he's worth it or not. You know, I wrote a whole section in there about off-ball linebackers. Like, we have seen these things not pan out. Go look at Bobby Wagner. Go look at C.J. Mosley. Go look at Anthony Barr. Like, these contracts haven't aged well. And if the Bears looked at this back in April and said, we probably don't want to go 20. We probably want to go a little bit less than that, because of where Roquan Smith is compared to a Fred Warner, compared to a Shaquille Leonard, and expecting that he was going to take less than that, that's a gamble. Because when you have a player like that, if you're not going to pay top of market and you know that early on, then your best interest is to move on earlier rather than later. And it just kind of feels like they waited too long, and it got to this point. And it's August 16th, and nothing's been solved yet.
Yeah, really good stuff with Courtney Cronin. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Waddle would always say this to me, Courtney, dock the boat. So how, in your best guess, and I know it's an educated guess, but how would you say this thing gets solved? Does it end with a new deal? Does it end because Roquan Smith needs to play? Does it end with him not playing right away and sitting out? What eventually happens here?
Well, he has to play this year. He's got to be at least at full pay status, which is also full play. Again, go reading the language of the CBA. You're going to want to, like, tear your hair out, because it's like, what's full play versus full pay? And, you know, it's, are you on IR? Are you on PUP? Like, it's all this convoluted stuff. He has to play 60. Like, that's what it boils down to in order for his contract not to toll. That would be the worst possible situation for him, because the Bears retain him at $9.7 million next year, and you want to hit free agency. If you're not going to stay with the team, you want to be able to go make money somewhere else. So it's like, he's going to have to play. If you ask me in 2 weeks.
Yeah, like, what happens by opening day, Courtney? Opening day, we're sitting here, and what? Is Roquan going to play on his old deal? Will he have a new deal? Do they trade him? How do you think this happens by opening day?
I feel like by opening day, they've got to get something done, and for a multitude of reasons. Because it's not just for keeping Roquan Smith happy. You've got a lot of guys that, you know, you're hoping are the building blocks of this franchise, who are going to be coming up for deals soon. Cole Kmet, David Montgomery, Jalen Johnson, eventually Justin Fields. You know, you don't want to start a war between the front office and the locker room. And also, I mean, as this was explained to me by an agent I talked to for the story, you don't want a locker room lawyer in there, meaning if Roquan Smith doesn't get what he wants, you know, kind of being the guy that you know, badmouths the team and doesn't and kind of hurts things, hurts the culture that they're trying to build. Because if he's not happy, you think his teammates that are, you know, close with him, who have his who support him and have his side, are going to be happy too? Like, that's one way to quickly blow up whatever sort of culture and whatever sort of foundation you're trying to build in Chicago. And, you know, I feel like they certainly don't want to do that. They don't want the nuclear option. They want to be able to keep the player because they like the player. It's just a matter of at what number do they want to do that? And clearly it's not the same as what Roquan wants, and we just don't know how close they are yet.
All right, and before we let you go, JD used to do a really good job of, when I would get too excited, today, say, Sylvie, now calm down. You know, you're really getting too excited about these players. These are just practice players. I watched Saturday's game, and while I know the Chiefs can go up and down the field when their first team plays, they do it in a playoff game. Lord knows they're going to do it against a bad Bears first team defense. But overall, Courtney, I liked the way some of the young guys played. Would you talk me off that, or would you say, yes, it's a good start?
No, I'm not going to. If you're talking about Jaquan Brisker, Like, let's just use him for an example. Absolutely would not talk you off of that. Would actually go all in on that one, because I think we saw flashes in the way that he played and where he played, which is all over the back end of that defense, during Saturday's preseason game. The kid's going to be a star. And people I've talked to, evaluators I've talked to, like, all the stuff you saw in such a limited amount of time Saturday is what has been talked up about Jaquan Brisker, the instincts, the physicality, the violentness of, like, just the way that he plays the game. Like, that guy is all in, and he's so immensely talented, which, you know, is such a benefit, because that secondary needs it. Eddie Jackson needs that in order for himself to bounce back. I mean, it's not just that the Bears are hoping that Brisker helps fix the secondary. Eddie Jackson gets to go play free safety now because they got somebody who wants to play up in the box all the time. Like, they're hedging so much on the success of that player, and they kind of have to. So I think we saw some really good things from a preseason game. And trust me, I absolutely understand. I can hear JD in my head talking about how, you know, all we care about at ESPN is the quarterbacks, and that's the only storylines we're following, and he's absolutely right about that. But, you know, with some of the rookies, like, there are moments here that we've seen in the preseason, and especially in that game against Kansas City, that are good takeaways to know that this team is a ways away, but at least they've got pieces in place or starting to that they can build on.
So Sylvie's desire to bet $50,000 on the Bears winning 12 or more games is probably still a bit of a reach right now.
That is lighting your money on fire, okay, I would believe. I'm also not much of a gambler, so, like, you guys would definitely know better than me. But I don't know. Is there a safer White Sox bet you could make with that?
Well, what about Jack Sanborn as the defensive rookie of the year?
Yeah, it was the Sanborn game on Saturday, of course.
I mean, it really was. And what a cool storyline, too, for him being from Lake Zurich and, you know, being a Wisconsin kid, so the Big Ten ties, the whole thing. I mean, there were positions for him to be successful, and it wasn't, for me, it wasn't just the plays that he made on defense with, you know, giving them their best field position of the day at that point with that third quarter interception. It was the plays he made on special teams. The special teams tackles are huge, and that's your way onto the roster. As an undrafted guy, you've got to stand out in those ways, and you really have to do everything to earn that spot on the 53, and those are the things, if he keeps doing that, they're going to put him in position to do that.
How do you feel, on a separate note, about, and I'm not talking about you as a reporter, okay? This is just you as a person. Is there a cutoff time for a text message at night, or is that on the phone user to turn off their alerts to not wake them up at night?
Well, in season, I guess this is peeling back the curtain, I don't sleep with my phone on Do Not Disturb, because I've had press releases come through in the middle of the night, or news break in the middle of the night. And sometimes, like, for example, when Yannick Ngakoue got traded from Jacksonville to Minnesota, I'm an early riser. I happen to be up at 4:35 a.m. Central Time on a Sunday morning during training camp. I was the first person to see it go through, so I was like, thank God I kept my phone on loud, because otherwise I would have probably slept like a normal human till about 7 on a Sunday morning and missed that by about 3 hours. But I don't know. As a reporter, it feels like you're always on. Like, there are certain times where I put my phone on Do Not Disturb just because I don't want to be checking it. But in season, like, you got to keep it on loud. And you know, especially if you're dealing with coaches, with sources, like, a lot of these people don't get done with work till like 9 o'clock at night on a weeknight. So if you need a question answered, or if you're shooting the breeze about something football related, like, that might be a 9:30 p.m. text message. And, you know, that isn't too late in my mind.
Courtney, great stuff. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Courtney.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Courtney Cronin, there you go. He's former Bear Tom Waddle. I'm Sylvie. It's Waddle and Sylvie. We've got Waddle's World coming up next.
This is Waddle's World.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
Bears legend.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him.
Tom Waddle.
Amazing.
What's going on in the world of sports?
Look at all the sports fans. We do aerobics in here. So many activities.
Let's find out together.
Step class. Making my head spin. How many activities we can do.
As we enter.
This is how we do it.
Waddle's World.
Da, 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 da. Yeah, Waddle's World brought to you by our great partners at Wintrust Community Banks. They are Chicago's banks. Find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank. Visit Wintrust.com/find us, member FDIC. We were all enthralled with the exciting, at least the last two innings of the White Sox-Astros game last night. Did you find it in your schedule to actually view the final series episode of Better Call Saul?
All right, so I was behind on last week's episode. I finished up last week's episode while I had the Cubs and White Sox game up. It was 2-0, sort of a lifeless Sox game going on right then. And then the Sox game got interesting. And after I finished that, what is that, penultimate? Would that be the second to last penultimate?
Yeah, smart people say that word.
Hey, Carmen always uses penultimate.
I can't pronounce the word, so I stay away from it.
The second to last episode, when I finish that up, I'm like, the Sox game is starting to get good. That deserves main screen TV. And then it was too late to get into a finale when I need all my focus on that. And so I'm going to hopefully... Now, I got Hard Knocks on tonight. I mean, you know how my love for Dan Campbell is right now. We got to talk to
second to only Mark Giangreco. I talked to Mark Giangreco on the ride home last night. He was just giddy about
Dan Campbell.
Dan Campbell and Hard Knocks.
Yeah, you got to watch. Will you promise you will?
I will. I got other things going on.
So I don't even want to know from you if it was good or bad.
From the guy who plows through 10 episodes of a new season of TV every day, he's got things going on.
Yeah, I do. I had to finish, before I start Hard Knocks, I got other things I need to finish.
Like the bottle of scotch in my...
Like The Wire. I'm almost through season 4 of The Wire now. I was going to say, like, I couldn't even... Because this is the last season of Better Call Saul, I would not have even tried to watch a half an episode. Like, I dedicated myself to a full episode every night because I didn't want to kind of miss anything with
it.
So, but yeah, I'm not telling you how.
Don't tell me if it was good, bad, let down, emotional, whatever.
It was,
I
will say it was an emotional night for me. Yeah. Because it was the final episode of one of my favorite series of all time. And my daughter had all of her friends over for last time before they all went off to go off to college. So it was double emotional. It was a two punch of emotion.
Well, they'll be back for winter break and all the... She'll be hosting parties for a while now.
Who knows? Look, I've had a child in my house every day for the last 29 years.
That's amazing. And so
my oldest is 29. My second oldest turns 27 tomorrow.
Now, will you be considered an empty nester?
Yes.
Or because she still legally lives with you guys because she's college?
No, she's living on campus at Boston.
You're an empty nester?
I would think so.
Oh, man.
Yeah. More time for tennis.
For you or your wife?
Not me. I'm just getting over the pulled hamstring.
Maybe a little doubles action, huh?
That's all I can play. I can't play singles.
Pickleball? You want to get into pickleball?
Not really. I've seen it.
A good game of handball?
I've seen it, but I'm...
What about team handball?
No. You look like a good handball player.
No. Nothing. I'm not taking the bait. It's got to be something that is not an individual sport that's got activity
Water polo? Team sport?
No.
There's no I in team for Waddle.
No. There is an M and an E. That spells me. So... But no, I'm not interested. I was actually speaking on behalf of my wife. She can play more tennis because she doesn't have to worry about a kid in the house anymore.
And she's a champion. That's why.
She is.
State champion.
So you didn't get a chance to see it. When do you think you'll watch it? Not tonight because you got Verlander and Cease.
Right. So I got Verlander, Cease. By the way, do you know that my wife and Mason are going solo to the game on Wednesday where Jesse's trying to set up this beat with Lance McCullers? But do you know where they're sitting? They're sitting, I don't know as a Sox fan if you know this section. They're sitting in section 108 for all these Sox fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
Section 108 is in the right field bleachers.
The cult section.
That is like where Mason may have his first beer is what I've been told.
Really?
And he's going to be...
Is he going to be pissed off where his seats are?
He's probably going to be donning like a Lance McCullers worn jersey in the middle of the game.
That's true. He should be wearing his Sox gear. No, this is where... Like the most passionate fans of the Sox sit in right field. They're hardcore fans. They have a good time. It's a party.
And he was a little disappointed with the outcome last night, I hear.
Yeah, because he roots for the Astros now, too. I don't know.
You need to get a good, firm grounding of him. Go to your room.
We had a good Dusty conversation, though. He was asking me about Dusty, and I said, your daddy doesn't like Dusty. And he asked me why.
And what'd you say?
And I said that when he was the boss and in charge of the Cubs, he did not hold players accountable. He let the players do whatever they want, and they needed more structure.
Did Dusty make a few mistakes last night?
Yes.
Did they take their pitcher out? A little. I mean, it was the eighth inning.
Someone I saw who I follow on Twitter, that anonymous MLB executive, tweeted that he constructed his lineup wrong, too, with his best hitters batting, what, third or fourth instead of first or second?
Yeah. You'll get Altuve back in the lineup tonight.
Right.
If you're Vasquez an Astros. For Mason, for the Astros fans out there, you'll get the full lineup tonight. But
see, Verlander.
Good for him. Good for him. By the way, there was a little note on that. I think this is the, it's the third matchup of starting pitchers with sub-2 ERAs with a minimum of 20 starts since MLB lowered the mound in 1969.
Think about that. This is a historic matchup.
This is my favorite part of baseball.
Me too.
I've always said this. You give me a good pitcher's duel over a slugfest every single time. Interested to see how Cease handles. Like, this is, he's been outstanding. What, 13 straight starts with one run or less?
I think it's
one or no
14.
Runs, or is it 14?
Well, yeah, 14 with unearned, yeah.
So, like, this is a big start. I get it. You know, someone will text you or tweet you and say they all count the same. Okay. But this is the game of the night, Major League Baseball.
This is measuring stick stuff, too.
Yeah.
This is a team that they lost to last year in the postseason.
And you've got Verlander squaring off with Dylan Cease. I wonder how Dylan Cease, this is a big moment for him.
They hit Verlander fairly well, really well the first time.
Smacked him around.
We'll see if he remembers that.
This is one of those matchups, too, where it could go a long way in determining the Cy Young for either guy, if either one outpitches the other. Because if they kind of just go along doing what they're doing, their stats are going to be comparable at the very least. And so if one outduels the other, that might be enough to get the Cy Young vote.
Yeah.
You got any predictions on tonight's game?
I have no clue how it's going to go.
I know you're going to wager on it. Where's your money?
I played one of those DraftKings parlays that they set up. And it was betting on Cease to have a really big game, like over 8.5 strikeouts. It was like +500. Over 8.5 strikeouts, less than 2.5 runs, a White Sox win. Like, I put $5 on it just to give me a rooting interest.
Five turns into 200?
No, it was what, five turns into 30 or 40, something like that?
Okay.
We'll say the
Astros. How do you feel it's going to go?
I thought that this series would be a 2-2 split. I think what I was counting last night as a loss, as all the way up until Dusty made the pitching change. And then I saw even then I saw the graphic, and it showed that the Astros had the best ERA collectively of any bullpen in Major League Baseball. That was an L for me. Like that's why I said that it was by far the best win of the season for this White Sox team. And you just wonder, I wonder whether or not it'll be something that will propel them to any type of run here. I mean, they just took, it was their fourth in a row. I mean,
the Sox are +105 on the money line. Astros are -125.
Does that make sense? Obviously, because Verlander is the front runner for the.
Well, I don't even think it's Verlander. It's that the Astros lineup is better. And like the one thing is, Sylvie, you bet the over. The Astros, the only team that strikes out less than them is the Guardians. So,
that's not good.
No, but maybe Cease will be.
Cease is electric.
Maybe he'll be, you know, extra motivated to pitch against his childhood hero, Justin Verlander.
You wonder if being extra motivated though will work against him. You just don't know. It'll be interesting.
It's another good test along this maturation problem.
I wonder if Tony will stay awake for it.
It's a good point too.
This could be one of those 2-hour and 10-minute games. Not a bad thing. Zach Wilson's right knee surgery was called a success. What are they going to tell you? Oh, you know what? We butchered that thing. Anyway, it was the same exact injury, wasn't it, that Lonzo Ball has? Meniscus fix and a bone bruise. I think that's exactly
Do we know what Lonzo Ball had?
I don't know if they know what's causing the pain or what was causing the pain. But that was the diagnosis.
He can carry it. From what we hear out in L.A., he's carrying his luggage quite well. I don't know if you saw this. Mitch is without one of his weapons Anthony Miller out for the season with a shoulder injury. I didn't even know until like 2 weeks ago Anthony Miller was actually with the Steelers.
Right.
But yeah, that's he's out with a
Atlanta
shoulder surgery.
Or the Steelers now. But didn't he have a bum shoulder since the second he got to the Bears?
It was something that he dealt with for quite some time.
He would pop it back in?
Yeah. So he's out for the season. Speaking of out for the season for former Bears, the Dolphins have placed Adam Shaheen on IR after his trade to the Texans was voided. He's going to have knee surgery. He'll probably end up in Atlanta at some point as well, right?
He can't do that, can he?
Well, when he's done, when he comes back from it all.
He's as big of a bust as Mitch.
I saw I know we're going to do some fantasy football stuff here shortly and soon, in the next day or so. I think with ESPN's fantasy board, I believe Justin Fields came in as the 18th ranked quarterback. I was looking for Mitch. I did not see Mitch. I don't believe Mitch made the top 20.
Speaking of Mitch, this is from Josh Roundtree, who's at Steelers camp right now. Kenny Pickett running with the ones right now.
I heard that.
Clear out the 7 o'clock hour for Cap and Jay Hood tomorrow.
No, that means he's going to avoid it.
Yeah. That's a good point. I heard that Lewis Riddick was effusive with his praise of Pickett. Now, Lewis is a Pitt grad as well. But I also saw that Baldy, who breaks down everything, was effusive with his praise.
I need Mitch. Well. I was telling Bleck and I want Mitch for a handful of stuff.
I do too. I like the chaos it creates.
Come on.
I like when everyone chirps back and forth at each other. Just like, remember, I was asking for chaos when Mitch came to town last year in the preseason with the Bills.
And he gave it to us.
He did. He gave us plenty of controversy. All right, I got some nonsense when we come back. We haven't done Florida or Ohio in a while. Is anything crazy going on in either of those
states?
We
can spin one,
Why don't we spin one of those?
There's always things.
We'll do that when we come back.
Get ready to play the game that's sweeping the nation. Public drunkenness. Exotic animals. Dumb criminals. Random stabbings. Or maybe just some good old-fashioned debauchery. Everything's on the table. It's the Sunshine State versus the Buckeye State as we play Florida or Ohio. And as always, listeners, feel free to play along at home.
All right, a suspected drug dealer arrested after sending random texts to county commissioner.
What?
A suspected drug dealer was arrested after asking a county commissioner if he wanted to buy cocaine in a, quote, random text message, authorities said on Monday.
He was just sending out random text messages.
He was soliciting for clients. Yep. Trying to see if anyone wanted a little booger sugar.
Oh, I love the booger sugar
Jack
comments.
Edward Fisher was arrested after an undercover buy bust operation, according to the sheriff's office.
Get your booger sugar here.
County Commissioner Joe Mullins alerted the sheriff's office that he received a text message from someone offering to sell him an 8-ball of cocaine.
Boy, that's just...
These are conflicting because I always think of coke as Miami. But isn't the three name thing an Ohio thing?
As your perps? But your perps are usually listed with three names. They give you the full names when you get arrested. But yeah, I think that...
What's the name
on it? John Michael Michael.
His name was Jack Edward Fisher. Still is.
Still is. He can go anywhere.
I'm going to stick with the South Florida cocaine connection.
I'm going to go with you as well. That's got to be... I'll go with Vero Beach.
I'm going to go Coral Gables.
It took place in Palm Coast, Florida.
Yeah,
all right. There you go. That's a good win for us.
Do you see the Royals are selling pulled pork sandwiches with Reese cups?
Yeah, Benetti
Would
was
you
eating
eat
this. You know,
boy, they sat in the booth in Kansas City and they just kept having food pushed on them.
Every time Benetti would have like, and it pisses Fred Huebner off, and that's why I love it even more because I like that Benetti and Stone have fun. Okay, I like when any booth has a good time. It's a long effing game.
Especially when your team is underachieving.
I don't want baseball 3.5 hours. I'm sorry. I like a little fun, and I like the joy that they have. I actually had this story about a week and a half ago, right before the Sox were in town, and sure enough, the next day, Benetti was on camera eating it, and he said it was awesome.
Really?
It's pulled pork with a Baby Ray's barbecue sauce and Reese's peanut butter cups on top of it.
I like to keep things like that separate. I'll have the pulled pork, which I love, and then maybe have the Reese's cups for dessert afterwards. Some people can mix and match.
Can peanut butter pretty much go with anything, though? Isn't that the sort of thing here?
I think peanut butter would then overwhelm the taste of the barbecue.
I don't know if you can overwhelm barbecue. Maybe it gives you that, it makes it smoother.
Are you one that likes to mix foods like that?
No, not usually.
I'm not either, but this one's actually intriguing to me. Like, I would try this, I think.
I've never had any treat that was bad that had Reese's peanut butter cups on it.
I'm with you. Yep.
Like, whether it's an ice cream, whether it's a pie, whether it's a cake.
How about somebody just with a sweaty palm offers you some Reese's cups?
It depends
who's
palm.
I'll take those, yeah.
Who's palm?
Some guy you just met at the ballpark.
Are they wrapped?
Well, that's...
But you could see a little bit of the chocolate is oozing out.
But they still have the wrapper on it.
The majority of the wrapper.
I think you're safe.
Maybe not all the wrapper, but the majority of the wrapper.
Now, like, would you put Reese's peanut butter cups on a steak?
No.
You know, like, this is meat. This is pulled pork.
No, I wouldn't.
That's ridiculous.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's
why I wouldn't put it on pulled pork.
The reason we like everything Reese's is because it's usually in a dessert item. This is putting Reese's peanut butter cup on an entree. Pulled pork.
I wouldn't order that. Like, if somebody just delivered it to you, I'd probably pick the Reese's cups off of it and then...
save it for dessert?
Yeah. That's how I'd probably roll with it.
I love
the combo, but I can't remember the last time I had a combo like that that was odd.
Is it something to do with the sweet and the savory?
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't want the deliciousness of the peanut butter cup to overwhelm the deliciousness of the barbecue pulled pork.
Are you lying to us? Do you really like Reese's peanut butter cups?
I do, yeah.
Because you're not a good dessert guy.
Yeah, but that's not really dessert. That's just candy.
It's a treat? Just a treat?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, have that any time of the day. Did you see this story? Doctors were stunned to discover a steel cup in a drunk man's stomach. You should see the size of this cup, too. It's like a chalice. Like, and I know what you're asking.
A drinking cup.
Yes.
Not like a steel cup.
I showed
cup
it to Miller. Miller,
down.
I showed it to you, didn't I? Did I show you the story? The cup is not like, it's not like a Dixie cup.
Oh, it's like a Yeti?
Kind of, but not like a monster, like not a 20-ounce, you know, coffee cup. It was a good sizable cup, though. You know how it got there?
No. Wow. Don't tell me. It went.
They believe it was initially inserted in the opposite area.
Yes. That's what I was.
Yes, doctors in India were stunned when they were tasked with removing a steel cup from a man's stomach, which they believe initially inserted in the other direction. I remember having this conversation with you.
By the other direction, you mean
The backside? You know,
yeah. That's the only way it could go through.
How does it go to your stomach?
The front door.
How does it go to your stomach? Unless it's got legs. Like, you can't travel.
I think there's a long arm on the other end of that cup.
Oh, Jesus.
If I had to guess.
Well,
like,
anyway.
Like when you try and steal from a vending machine. You need long arms.
Patient was rushed to surgery August 6th, where doctors successfully removed a cup the size of a hand from what appeared to be an incision in his stomach. But again, how does it get into the stomach?
I'm sure
we've seen the pictures of this.
You know these ER doctors. They tell you all the time things that get
million
stuck.
To one shot, Doc.
Yeah. I have, like, our neighbors, their son and his wife are both emergency room doctors in South Carolina. Huh. It's crazy. And they love it. So much so that they're not looking to move. Usually, in a lot of instances, that's kind of the process. As you evolve as a doctor, you go to an emergency room,
right.
And then you go
but they
to...
Love the, they love it, the chaos so,
yes.
of that.
Yeah.
Listen, you're ever at a cocktail party, you find yourself next to a proctologist, don't leave, Tommy. You'll hear the best stories you ever heard in your life.
Really?
That's straight from Seinfeld.
I've not met a proctologist. Have you?
Not at a cocktail party, no.
Ever? Have you met a proctologist?
I don't believe so, no.
Do you know one proctologist?
I do not.
Do you have a proctologist?
I don't. I could call my dad who had hemorrhoid surgery back when I was a young lad.
Jim in the West Loop had the sandwich. Can I take him really quick before Big Cat? Jim, thumbs up or thumbs down on the sandwich?
It's a thumb sideways, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's
way
good.
Too much. Way too much barbecue sauce.
Yeah.
The peanut butter cup's pretty mushy. And yet they picked a Chicago-based barbecue sauce. Why would they pick Sweet Baby Ray's in Kansas City?
It's a good call. I don't know, Jim. It's just right? Two delicious things don't need to be combined.
Were you at the Royal Sox
Series? I do have one other thing for you. I do have one other thing for you guys.
Okay.
You got to stop calling it a Reese's peanut butter cup. You literally have an ad for Reese's peanut butter on your show.
I think I said Reese's. Think I
you guys have dropped about six Reese's while you
no,
did that.
No, never me. Reese's. Reese's.
I'll wear that badge.
Reese's. Reese's. It's a, you yes, I know the commercial. I know
your,
that ad.
During the show.
And they keep saying the name over and over. Thanks,
they
Jim.
Over and over. Yes, they do.
All right, care. Jim. See you later. There's Jim.
Thanks, Jim, for the scolding.
All right, Barstool Big Cat joins us next. Does he believe Tony La Russa put in Adam Engel because of the fan? Big Cat, I'm sure, is going to enjoy this story coming up next.